This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon, this is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Amy Tan and her family took a road less travelled and chose to live in the jungle surrounded by nature. For almost 10 years, they lived off the grid on a farm in the jungles of Perak and ran Permaculture Perak, which offered farm stays and apprenticeship programs. A year ago though, Permaculture Perak was forced to shut after a long dispute over the land they were on with the Perak State Development Corporation. So I'm going to find out more about that eviction and also more about, you know, how they ran Permaculture Perak from Amy Tan, who is the co-founder of Permaculture Perak. Welcome, Amy. How are you today?
Hi. Good afternoon, Juliet.
Nice to have you on the show. So take me back to the start. You know, how did Permaculture Perak come to be?
All right. So Permaculture Perak was actually started by my husband 2 years before we met. So we actually met when I was a visitor into the farm. And he was just initially setting things up. Well, you know, like romance story, you know, girl meets boy, ends up in the jungle, beautiful setting, you know, hornbills flying over the valley.
Okay, wow.
I was from KL and I was having a life as a Pilates teacher and a therapist. And I gradually began to live a half city life and a half jungle life until our first daughter was born. And that's where I jumped fully into the life of the grid.
Okay. And, you know, why did you want to do this? You know, why did you want to have that, as I mentioned, you know, that road less traveled, you know, living surrounded by nature and, you know, foregoing all the trappings of city life?
Well, I had already in the back of my mind some years before that I would imagine that I would live in a little plot of land and have a little garden of mine. But at that time, I knew that it was not something very possible to do as a single woman. That's one thing. There was also another part of me was looking for a lot of connection with nature. I work as a holistic therapist, so I work with many people who come with pain issues and injuries and illness. And I found that being in nature was a way for me to regenerate. It gives me positive energy to continue the work. So how I ended up in Permaculture Perak was that I was looking for a place which was completely natural and had all these positive nature ions to recharge me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And somehow it just fit. I didn't think that I would go such to an extreme to be off the grid. Yeah, but it was served to me that way.
Okay. And I do understand that the land on which you stayed, you know, that used to be a tea plantation. Am I correct?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I mean, tell me a little bit about that, you know, and tell me a bit about the area, lush jungle, a lot of wildlife. You mentioned hornbills. I'm very envious already.
Okay. So the history that I know of what it was before as a tea plantation are bits and pieces of information which I've collected from the people I know in Lingo itself, people who have worked there. So there's no really like written documented history about this place. So we know that around the early 80s, there was an English company that's called Tate and Lyle. They were looking to set up tea plantations in Malaysia. This company somehow ended up deciding that this plot of land in Lingong was perfect for setting up a tea plantation. At its peak, it was employing approximately 300 over people. So every morning we know that every morning the ladies from the kampung will gather and then there will be like a transport, which I think at that time would be a truck. And then they would transport them early in the morning. They go up into the hills, they pluck tea and then they get driven down. So they were actually the biggest employer, if I'm not mistaken, at the town at that point. So I knew that this place was being run for 12 years. It was a joint venture between the Perak State Development Corporation and the English company. From the reports of the locals, it was a really beautiful valley. It was planted with flowers, you know, it was really cool. And after the 10th year, they told me that Perak State Development Corporation has taken over fully as 100% owner of that place. And unfortunately, due to certain mismanagement that they were informing me about, the operations of this tea plantation ceased 2 years after. Okay. And that would be around the early 90s.
Okay. And so there was a tea plantation, as you mentioned, but I mean, there was still a lot of intact jungle area, of course, surrounding that.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, they just took an area within the Bintang Hijau Forest Reserve and turned it into a tea plantation. Everything else around remained untouched as a forest reserve. So where we were located, we were actually at the fringe and the border of this forest reserve. It sits about 500 meters above sea level. In this gorgeous valley, so it's like the valley is almost hugging you. It overlooks down to the Lenggong Valley. So when you stand right outside, when you look out, you see the valley below, and right behind the valley, you will see the Kinta Range valleys. So, I mean, the backdrop is just heavenly. Everybody that comes and arrives and stands at that spot would just say, wow, I feel like I'm in heaven. Especially at sunrise, because at sunrise, the valley below, there is a cloud lake.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So every morning, almost, you have a cloud lake. So you really feel like you're above the clouds. And of course, I would describe like beyond looking at the cloud lake, you have the hornbills that are starting to take flight to go out for their day forage. And somewhere around 9:30 to 10 o'clock in the morning, when the sun starts to heat up, and the clouds will walk past up us to above. So it's like a mist that is just flowing from beneath and passing us. It's magic. Yeah, it's magic. Every other day, almost every day. Yeah.
Sounds amazing. And I know even gibbons, right, were some of your neighbors,
yes.
Right?
Yeah, the gibbons were calling also every morning.
Amazing. And I guess, you know, once you and your husband took over, or once, you know, your husband started it, you know, how did you get the farm up and running? What sort of things did you plant? You know, how did you get it to serve you guys in that sense?
Okay, because we are 500 meters above sea level, the access road is one of our biggest challenge. It's not a properly tarred road. So it's actually 5 kilometers of dirt, almost dirt road up the hill. That itself made the decision for almost everything that we do up in that farm. Being the geography and the current plant there are like in the jungles. So you would imagine that it's not like a clear cut area where we would just clear up everything in order to plant. We were trying in a way to coexist with the jungle. So we would just open very small plots and we put a lot of trees, like fruit trees. And then at certain plots, we would be planting small food gardens.
Mm. Yeah, and I remember reading that you did it also, not just for food, but also for medicinal purposes as well.
Yeah, so we are like, we are huge believers that nature is medicine. Mm-hmm. So nature is not medicine just in terms of plants, but of course, being in nature itself is medicine for our soul. We took on collecting a lot of local tropical herbs. It was kind of a little project that we did informally. Wherever we went, we would be seeking out local herbs from like in front of the kampong house, in front of the auntie's house. And we would just be like, oh, what's this? And then usually they always have some information that you will never find. Oh, you know, this one is good for this. You know, they come and my neighbors come and grab this for this. So we're like, oh, can we have some, please? You know, so that's how we kind of had this gradual collection of plants that we had. And the other part of it was also being mindful about how we live, you know, knowing that we are living off the grid, knowing that we live in the forest, we had to know how to take care of ourselves.
Of course.
In some ways. Yeah. So having the medicinal plants were a way for us to know, okay, today we have like an itch. Today we have like a skin reaction. We know that we go to grab aloe vera and put it on, you know, or if we have a cut, you know, we know that we pull out the turmeric, pound it a little bit and slap it on to make sure there's no infection. So it was kind of part of taking care of ourselves too.
No, that's wonderful. And I know that, you know, you do follow the principles of permaculture, right? When you were, you know, designing all of this for yourselves. Maybe for those who are unfamiliar, can you kind of just explain what those principles are?
So permaculture essentially is a collection of indigenous and very traditional agriculture principles, which has been collected and taken and modernized so that we can apply them to how we work with the land for now. And the idea of permaculture essentially is, it's very simple. It's basically to work with nature. Yeah, we're not imposing ourselves and our human ego to just make sure that we want things and do things the way we want. It's like we have to decide. If you want to plant something here, you need to know whether when it rains, is it going to be like flushing with water or not, you know? It's so permaculture, I feel, is just about being observant and being understanding about how these forces of nature work and how to make things work the best and the easiest for you in terms of growing food and all these living necessities that you need.
Yeah, and am I correct in saying it sort of draws inspiration from nature itself?
Definitely.
Okay, all right. I'm speaking today to Amy Tan. She's the co-founder of Permaculture Pera, and we're finding out more about, you know, the farm that she used to run, which has now been shut. And after this quick break, we're going to find out, you know, what exactly led to their eviction from Permaculture Pera over in Lengkong Pera. You're tuned to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line from Pera today is Amy Tan. She is the co-founder of Permaculture Pera, which was an off-the-grid farm that was based in Lengkong Pera. Unfortunately, the farm was forced to shut a year ago. We're going to find out more about that in a little bit. But, you know, when you still had things running, you guys did also decide to open the farm to the public as a homestay and also for other things, right? I mean, tell me a bit about that. You know, what made you decide to do that, and what could visitors do when they came to visit you?
Okay, when we ran as a homestay, what we did was we offered weekend stays and like rewilding courses also for people to come. The homestay and the farmstay experiences were designed for specifically urban visitors, a lot of families who actually want to experience an off-grid life. And they wanted to have the children exposed to a way of life that was not commonly seen or are known in a city life. So when the visitors would come, they would be like completely immersed in this jungle setting already. And we bring them to these little secret nooks and waterfalls that we have. We bring them and introduce them to the plants and the medicinal plants we have. We cook outside. We teach them how to do like bread. But then we had this really famous bread, which we call like jungle bread. And we call it the jungle bread because we didn't have an oven, right? We didn't have an electric oven because we run on solar power. So we created a way to make like fresh bread for breakfast using the stove. And that was like the highlight of a lot of people, you know, like, wow, I live, you know, when I came to the jungle, I thought that I had to let go a lot of this luxuries. And here I have fresh baked bread, you know, and we teach them how to do that. So a lot of our experience was catered or designed to give people a very close connection to nature, like firsthand, and also empowering people to see that, you know, when you live off the grid, when you try to live a life that's on the land, it's not about giving up a lot of sacrifices. Yes, there are some things you have to sacrifice, but there's so many things which are so luxurious at the same time.
Yeah. Ask anybody based in the Klang Valley how they're searching for bread and hoarding it right now, right? But, you know, one interesting thing was that you guys were even featured in National Geographic, you know, in a series called Living Free with Kimmy Werner. Am I correct?
Yes, we were.
Tell me about that.
So, at first we got contacted by a production company saying that they wanted to do a reality TV series about our place. And we were a bit apprehensive because we, you know, knowing how reality TV is, was designed for pure entertainment. We were so worried that they're going to make like some like, you know, thing out about how we live and, you know, make out a funny comedy, which was not what we wanted. But we met up with the producers and we realized that they were coming from National Geographic. And they sent us really, really in-depth idea of what they wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And we felt like, okay, this would be something that we would be comfortable with to do this. And then, of course, they say that you're going to do a program with Kimi Werner. So we're like, oh, Kimi Werner. We found out all about her. And like, oh, great. You know, it became like a really great privilege to get to know her and work with this production crew from Nat Geo.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. And I mean, that really put you guys on the map as well. You know, unfortunately, you need these sorts of things, I suppose. I'm curious, you know, you do have three children as well. How did they adapt to life in Lenggong?
Okay. The lucky thing for the kids is that they didn't have to adapt to life in Lenggong because they grew up there. Okay?
That's right.
So all our children were in the jungle since they were 1 month old because I had to obviously do the traditional confinement with my mom. And after they turned a month old, we were back in the jungle with them. So they didn't have to adapt. You know, it was their home.
So nothing to them, that's just life.
Yeah, I mean, like... I think a lot of people who especially visited us, they were always very curious. And that was the one thing that they couldn't make up in their mind. Like, how are these people going to exist with children in the jungle, you know? And that was one category of people who were actually coming to the farm. You know, they just wanted to see, like, I think many people have this idea that maybe they want to have their children very close to nature, but then they're also having this fear, like, oh my God, it's so dangerous out there. Yeah. So they came to see if it was really possible to marry the two ideas. Yeah, so our children are like every other child, yeah? The only thing that they have, which is very fortunate for them, is that they had a jungle around them as their playground. Yeah, so they had a stream. They would be jumping into the stream and, like, you know, catching fish, frogs, things that perhaps our parents used to do when they were younger. So, yeah. But we as parents as well, we are not adamant about, like, okay, we just need to keep our children in the jungle. Our children have also regular exposure to KL life, the city lights. So for them, they don't see a difference between having a jungle as a playground or going to a park in Taman Tun to play in the playground. Yeah. So, but the difference is that they feel comfortable in nature. Mm-hmm. They don't have a fear. Yeah. And of course, when you have a stream in front of you, you have endless hours of ways to play.
I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. Climbing trees. Leeches are fun for them. You know, they're like, oh, it's funny. Hey, mom, I got a leech today. You know. I'm like, oh, great, you know, yeah.
That's amazing because I hate leeches, but well done to you and your kids. And, you know, something else I know that you did was you also kept livestock, but not for food, though, but you kept them for other purposes. Am I correct?
Yes. Yes. So we had three cows. We had some chickens as well. So the livestock, we also grew some fish. So the livestock we see as an essential part of having a farm. Especially if you want to have a farm that doesn't rely on chemical pesticides and fertilizers. Mm-hmm. So these livestock we were keeping to coexist with us. The cows, they graze, so they help us to maintain the jungle greens, not creeping too close to us. We use their manure and we invest them back into the soil. Same as the chickens. We keep the chickens to take the greens. We feed them garden greens that we cut. We also put their manure goes back into the garden, their manure goes into the compost. So it's kind of like a coexisting system that we are having. Yeah.
Yeah, that's wonderful. And I mean, everything sounded so great, right? And you had it going really very well. But, you know, while all of this was happening, you were also facing troubles with the Perak State Development Corporation, who you guys had actually leased the land from back in 2008. Am I correct?
Yes, that's correct.
I mean, what were those issues? Tell me about that.
So the issues that we had with the Perak State Corporation, which is SEDC, began 2 years after my husband got the land. And that's when I moved in with him, around the same time. What happened was before this, the surrounding was purely virgin forest. Mm. So, but... 2 years after, the SEDC had leased out our neighboring land, about 200 acres, to nearby timber operation. And it started when this timber company obviously was starting their works. They started to clear almost like 200 acres of virgin forest, which is on a very steep hill of about 45 to 50 degrees slope. That itself is very risky. So that's when we started to make some reports to, for example, the forestry department or the land office. We also made reports to the Suhakam about, because of it's a water catchment area for the people of Lengo. So that's when trouble really started for us. We began to receive eviction notices back then in 2012. They wanted to evict us from our land on the basis that we did not pay any rent. Our rental was paid, but they began to return them to us.
Okay. And why? And did they give you any reasons for returning your rent?
No. There was no reasons for returning our rent. So the rent started to be rejected. And at the same time, that's when we received the legal notices that we have to be they are initiating eviction against us based on non-payment of the rent.
Okay, so what happened then? You know, how did you sort of deal with this issue? You know, you're paying your rent. They accused you of not. You paid it, and then your rent was returned with no answer. You know, what did you do following that?
I mean, at first, we approached it in a way that we wanted to go and sit on the table and have a meeting and discuss with them, hey, what's going on? What can we do? What can we remedy? Let's talk. But unfortunately, we were not able to meet them. We had appointments or we were rejected. We never could meet our landowner. Yeah. Okay. After that, we also managed to seek some legal advice from some councils. So there was a lot of writing letters because there was a lonely way that we could communicate with them. But we never got any response from them.
Okay, but I do know, like, I've seen pictures of your husband going to meet, you know, with some of the authorities, you know, with some people in power who, you know, maybe might have helped. Did anything come of that at all?
Yeah, so we tried many ways. We also tried to present our profile, our project to the local MP during public events. That's where you see the photos. We have given them several times. We also approached people in the Perak state government presenting. We have even been approaching opposition politicians at that time to present our plight, but we never got any further than that.
Okay. All right. And I know that even with the National Geographic series, I mean, you tried to use that, you know, to show that you are also, you know, bringing revenue in for tourism, for state tourism as well.
Yeah. So in Lengo, because it's a new UNESCO heritage site for some years now, we were really happy that Lengo had that recognition, and we thought that the tourism would improve, and we were working very hard to take it to a bigger level. We had most of the visitors who were foreigners. Like, we had a lot of international visitors, like Europeans and Americans coming to stay with us. But given that the tourism infrastructure in Lengkong is very, very minimal, it was a big deterrent to attract a bigger crowd to the whole area in general.
Okay. All right. But I do understand that I think it was almost exactly a year ago. That was it, right? You were evicted and you were forced to move out. Am I correct?
Yeah. I mean, we initiated. So basically, from this eviction process that they initiated against us, they filed a case in court about like 3-4 years ago to base again on us not paying the rental. So they were going to evict us in court. Unfortunately, what happened was that, or fortunately, what happened was that the court summons did not arrive to us. So they got a judgment in default against us for not appear, because we didn't appear in court to defend our case. But we actually did not receive any court documents to And we were had no idea that there was this case going on.
Gosh.
So that was an advantage to us, because the moment we received the judgment in default, when SCDC or PKNP arrived with the judgment in default, they said, hey, you have 14 days to, this is the court ruling, you have 14 days to leave. We managed to scramble and get it set aside in the next court. So the case was opened up again.
Okay.
So the case went on, the legal case went on, and it went on to the High Court in Taiping, where we had a consent judgment. So at the end of this legal journey, we arrived at the consent judgment that we would be allowed to stay the remaining of our tenancy, mm-hmm. Which was about 2 years from then. But they would take away the extra 5 years that was in the agreement.
Okay.
And for us at that time, I mean, we didn't have another place to go. You know, we fought so hard and we built this place for so many years that we took that 2 years. We agreed to the consent judgment. We said that we would take these 2 years. And we felt that 2 years was enough time for us to really push something to get it more secure for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so that was... So when we got evicted last year in October, that was actually the consent judgment kicking in. That was when we had to leave, because we have exhausted our legal avenues.
Okay. All right. And so you had to move. You had to move out. I've seen the pictures of you packing your things, unfortunately, with your with your husband and your child, one of your children. What happened next? You know, I mean, what happened to you guys? And then what happened to the farm stay? You know, who currently lives there? You know, what has it turned into?
Okay, so after we left, we moved to another place where we could kind of just stay for a while in a relative's land and just help them out meanwhile. We were really, really sad.
Of course, yeah.
We were really sad, and we felt like lost because like we put in so much effort to fight, and we knew that this day would come, you know, like for every single day that we have lived there for the last 10 years, we live with full awareness that this day will one day arrive. So, and that was also a really, really magical thing for us, because it really taught us how to live in the present. We didn't know when they would take our home away from us, but we knew one day we will lose it and they would take it away from us. So we were really dejected. We took a break with our family, and me and my husband, you know, came to a conclusion that okay, we have lost our home, but we have not lost our life.
Mm-hmm.
We have a family, we are together, and we have a family to grow. We took a break. Mm-hmm. We went back to visit his family in Europe for a while, and that was really good. To just be away and to be away from all of this. And since then, we came back and we managed to stay on at this place of our family relative. And they gave us this chance to, why don't you know you guys be here and do whatever you can on this land.
Okay.
And we, again, had to start from scratch, from zero.
Mm-hmm.
getting to know the land again, you know, it's completely different. You know, the elements are different. But one thing that we knew how to do very well was we knew how to grow.
Okay.
We knew how to grow, food, you know. So that's what we did. You know, we're like, every day we just come up. And then we say, oh, maybe this patch is good. Okay, just start some lemongrass here, you know. So we just... kind of did bit by bit, you know, little by little, and just try to create gardens everywhere. And then, like, 3 weeks later, we realized, like, oh, okay, this spot doesn't work, you know. not good. So it's like getting to know a new person again.
Yeah.
So that's what we've been growing. It actually growing food and being at the garden every day was really the cure of our heart aches.
Okay. Nature, again, nature kind of.
Yeah, again, nature. But having said that, there is not one single day until today that we don't talk about Lengkong, that we don't talk about, there's no one single day where we think about it and not feel that heartache.
I can imagine.
And especially for our children, you know, like in the beginning, of course, they didn't understand. They knew that we had to move out from the home, but like they would then ask us, "Mommy, Daddy, when are we going home?"
Oh dear! Oh no!
And those moments were really, really heart wrenching for us, and we didn't, we just couldn't say anything to ease this kind of, or they would just say, "Oh, Mommy, you remember? Like, you know, I want to go to the stream, and remember that rock? You know, when I want to go and catch my prawns again." And that really is the driving force that kept us going to try to get the land back.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't given up.
Okay.
After we were evicted, because the eviction had created like a big news.
That's right.
Finally, the people in the management in PKMP said yes to meet us. Yeah, so that was right after we were evicted. We managed to meet the CEO of PKNP, and he said that, okay, you know, your case was managed by the old management, and there was the old government, and now we have a new government, and we work with rule of law. So they said, we are happy to give this land back to you. Let's make a new contract and let's do things with a clean slate. And we're like, yes, let's do that, because leave the legacy of the old behind. Let's start anew.
Yeah.
All we want was just to continue our work. So that went on next to having the involvement of the ex-tourism state exco of Para, YB Tan Kaheng.
Okay.
We were in meetings with him, and he was very, very supportive of our project.
Okay.
Seeing the value of the tourism potential for Lengkong as a UNESCO heritage site. So he was very supportive. We were in meetings together, and we presented our proposal to him. And ultimately, we made it very clear to the state government at that time that we are not trying to be greedy landowners. You know, we don't want to have hundreds and hundreds of acres to buy and to develop. You know, we want to preserve the magic and the forest of that place, because we can see every person that comes gets touched in this way that it's like you can't quantify this feeling, you know. Everybody leaves with the value of being touched by nature. That itself is beyond value. And we said that in our project, we want to preserve the forest. We just want to keep a small area so we can have security of the land. We can put in decent and more suitable buildings, because we were operating from the abandoned buildings of this tea plantation. We couldn't repair, we couldn't renovate, we couldn't do anything because of this 8 years eviction notice that was slapped on us. And things went very well. We were close to having some form of agreement that they would either give us a very long-term lease on the land or agree to sell us a small area of the land to use. But it stalled.
Okay.
And the first reason why it stalled was because PKMP at that time came to tell us that they didn't have sufficient board of directors to approve our application. So please wait for another couple of months while we get our board members complete to do this, to approve this.
Okay.
And we said, okay, that's fair enough, because we are not in like an urgent rush. You know, we are here for the long run. We can wait. And unfortunately, 2 weeks later, we switched government.
That's right.
Yeah. That's when it sort of stalled until now.
Okay. So
yeah. So we were not able to get any more response from them, despite us trying to again continuously meet the management of PKNP to continue the discussions for this. There has been no more response to our application. We have friends who are in Lengkong who periodically go back to where we were. Initially, it was first intact for the first month or two, the farm.
Okay.
And subsequently, it was being vandalized, and we still had things there which we couldn't move to anywhere. They started being stolen. And then after that, a few months, like 6 months later, our neighbor in Lengkong, of the next land, called us to tell us that he started losing stuff as well. So the thefts were already going to his place. And it has become like a drug den.
Oh, dear goodness.
Yeah, so our home turned into like a spot for like...
For vice.
Like drug. Yes, for vice. And to add on to that, about a month or two ago, again, from reports and pictures of friends who are there, the timber company that was operating the monoculture plantation next to us has taken over our buildings. They have bulldozed all the plants and things that we have planted, all the, cultivated these years. And their foreign workers now are living in our house.
Okay. A place that's still under, I mean, still technically it's there's a legal case ongoing, isn't it?
There is no more legal case.
Okay.
The land now belongs, has been taken back by the land owner,
okay.
Which is PKNP. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay.
So, yeah.
So that's currently where it stands, but you are going to try and I know that you're not going to give up on this, are you?
No, we are not going to give up on this because it's one thing is that it's a magical land. It's just beautiful. It's so pure and so heavenly that, like I said, you know, the way that it touched people's life, you know, it's not about touching our life. Our lives have been touched, you know,
yeah.
For so many years. And we feel today that even though we have lost this home, we feel like we are so grateful for this experience to have had this home. But the value sits again in how it can touch so many other people.
Yeah.
We were having visitors who are like young children. We had groups of like kindergarten children who came and you know, the moment you see them feel the freedom of being in nature, you know, the best thing that I really enjoyed was to hear how the giggles were coming out from the stream. We had a stream right in front of our house, and the children, they were like giggling, you know, like, oh, it's so cold, but you know, they had so much fun. And the other thing was the laughs that I could hear, you know, when the parents are in there with the children, you know, like, I mean, these things are so special. These things are so precious.
Yeah, tangible.
And that's, yeah. And that's what I feel that because I've been touched by this place and I know the magic of this place. And if it's not us, who else is going to fight for this place?
Yeah. Yeah, because I've seen some people post on your Facebook group, your Facebook page, like, it's time to move on, guys. You know, those sorts of things are some of the messages that you've been getting.
Yes,
but, you know, you've been saying, you know, if we don't fight, who's going to fight? You know, it's just going to be the big companies versus the little guys, and the little guys will
exactly.
always lose.
Yeah, and it's not that we're not trying to fight in, like, just fight for the sake
no,
of fight,
no,
fighting,
no.
You know, like... Yeah. I mean, we have moved on, you know, our lives have moved on. We are not stuck in a place where we are like, oh, poor us, you know, we are the ones being evicted and we lost our farm. No, we have, our life has grown beyond this.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that we would leave it behind. It's not something that we would leave behind, but it's not something that we would allow to consume all our life, you know.
Yeah.
You know, like how we always say that, you know, the universe knows best.
Yes, it does.
So, you know, our intention is clear, but the universe knows best. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So as it stands, as you said, you know, the timber company has taken over. They've cut off everything that you've done. There's a monoculture plantation there. Workers have taken over your former home. And that's currently where it is right now. How are you moving forward with your case?
So we are still exploring legal avenues
okay.
where we can find a way to either get back some of the losses that we have incurred. We are also doing confirmations in land office
mm-hmm.
to make sure that, you know, the basis of the eviction is accurate or whether it's not accurate, because sometimes there could be discrepancies in this. Because prior to us taking the lease before, there was some discrepancy with the ownership of the land. I think within the Perak state government, when they shift lands between agencies, the registration in the land office, it's not reflective immediately. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the initial thing that was also prior to the eviction. The monoculture plantation, there were some discrepancies in that. So we are still exploring and doing our own homework to see whether there are any means of us being able to take legal action against them for the eviction, whether it's unlawful or whether we could find ways we could sue them for like our losses.
Okay, all right. So that's ongoing. And I also know that you are in the midst of relaunching a self-reliant or sustainable living apprenticeship in November. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so previously in Permaculture Para, one of our main courses was a sustainable living apprenticeship. Mm-hmm. That's where people would come and live with us for a week or two, and then they basically get hands-on experience of how to live off the grid, how to work with, how to garden, you know, how to manage your water and all these skills that are involved in off-grid living. In the whole year that we have not been open after the eviction, we noticed that we were getting still inquiries. So
oh,
people
bless.
Were still sending us email like, oh, can I come to your farm stay? The other one that we often get is that people were still trying to look for these courses, you know, are you still running the apprenticeship program? So then we felt that, okay, you know, that could be a possible way that we could relaunch this because we would still like to share our experience.
Mm, definitely.
So we're planning now that in November to relaunch this sustainable living apprenticeship in a month-long format as opposed to a previous one-week format, because we realized that in 1 week, you can just have a little touch of an experience, but it doesn't really give you enough in-depth ability to really start something.
Okay.
And because of, again, the lockdown that we had through the year and the pandemic, I think it has changed a lot of what people are looking for. We've had many previous guests contacting us and saying that, oh, is there a way we can still learn from you? Because we find that we are totally lack of skills in this area for, you know, we have a garden, we want to grow some food, but where do we start?
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, so I think the pandemic has kind of pushed this realization for people that there is some skill that they need to add on to feel more secure for a more self-reliant future.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are coming in to launch again this apprenticeship for people who really want to take on this skill and do something with the skill, because given now that many people are more work from home, they have more flexible arrangement, also many people are losing their jobs.
That's right, yeah.
And this is a skill that could be very useful to start again, you know. If you don't have a job, but you still need to feed yourself, I mean, of course, you still need the income, but having the ability to feel that you can at least grow some of your own food, not for in a big scale, it's a really big step to spur on something bigger in a person. Also, many people we have met have now considered to shift their urban life, shift out from the urban life,
uh-huh.
and consider that maybe it's time to get a little plot of land just outside and start to have a more kind of balanced life in case there's a lockdown again or something. Yeah, and that's where they don't have the skill to do so. So apart from this apprenticeship that we're trying to relaunch, we're also going to start offering like a consultancy where we actually help people who are mostly landowners,
mm-hmm.
Who want to start something sustainable on their land.
Okay.
For their way of, for as a part of their way of life, not for commercial agriculture. So we are starting to offer these services where landowners can, we will work with the landowners and come up with design sustainable systems that they can implement in their land, from food gardens, off-grid solar power, all these things that they could incorporate into their land. And then we see that actually it marries both the sustainable apprenticeship and this design stuff, because if you are out of job, and there are so many landowners which are unable to manage their land and they don't have skills to manage their land, but if you have a group of people who have skills to manage a land and to know what to do on land, then you actually provide jobs for people.
That's right.
So the landowners, by converting their land into sustainable systems, can provide work for a group of people who now can be skilled in this way.
That's wonderful. And this isn't something I'm assuming that would be open to any Malaysian who's interested, and they can get in touch with you and you would, you know, meet with them wherever.
Yeah. So we will be relaunching again on our Permaculture Perak Facebook page. Okay. So for those who are interested, they are able to stay in touch with us or follow us on Facebook. And that's where they will get updates when these are launched and going.
Okay. All right. So that's great. And so you said that's going to start in November. So again, if anyone would like to get in touch, the best thing to do is go to Permaculture Perak's Facebook page and get in touch with you there.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much for joining me today, Amy. That's been a wonderful conversation. I've learned so much.
Thank you, Juliet.
I've been speaking to Amy Tan, who's the co-founder of Permaculture Perak, and we were talking about the former permaculture farm and farm stay that they used to have, she and her husband and her family, which unfortunately they were evicted from. But, you know, they are relaunching a new self-reliant sustainable living apprenticeship, and they've moved on to do some interesting things. So, again, if you'd like to get in touch, just head to their Facebook page, search for Permaculture Perak, or you can also go to their website at permacultureperak.com. If you miss any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcast on our BFM app, available on Google Play, the App Store, and also on Spotify. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.